I what'd you dress up as for Halloween, JT?
No.
You spiked your hair up?
That'd have been a good one.
My look changes.
I spray painted myself like Long did back in the day.
Here we go.
I was pulling up some old episodes and found like episode one.
Oh, Don Garlic.
Yeah. And gosh dang, COVID definitely aged everybody a little bit.
You know? That really helps the mood today. Appreciate it. You know, appreciate that,
team. Yeah, because you're the only guy on that episode.
I was going to say, because you couldn't be talking about anybody else. I mean, I'm sure Don Garlitz looks a little worse for wear post-COVID as well. But geez Louise, man. No, I didn't even click that video. I didn't even click that video because I didn't want to watch some. I didn't want to watch one of our podcasts from however many years ago when I know I look like I'm 12.
Number one.
Now looking like old man. I don't know.
Was that five years ago? How long? It was not like, how long ago was that?
Oh gosh.
Six years ago, probably.
6 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, bro. We've been doing the pod for a minute, which I've renamed this the pod. I say the pod a lot. Blake knows what I'm talking about. That's like the YouTuber slang. It's like, it's the pod. You guys want to, let's do the pod real quick. I was trying, the whole reason I wanted to get on here and I was excited to talk to you today, JT, is because I thought you'd be proud of Mike and I. We, and our wives by proxy, but we closed the club down. We closed the excess down at the Wynn 4 a.m. I'm 40 now. I'm pretty proud of that. I mean, I was definitely in the best shape of the group the next day for sure. For sure. And
we just stayed in the bed all day until it was time to go to the
Freeman wedding.
Freeman Moorhead.
You didn't, Mike, because you called me.
No, that was
you meant the next day. Okay.
Sunday night is when we stayed out all night.
Mike called me. Sunday night. He was trying to gamble.
I was like, I need my buddy JT here to help me place these bets.
I got off phone with you, and I called 1-800-BETS-OFF on you. Yeah. So if you get some pamphlets and shit in the mail,
to help with my gambling addiction.
Yeah. I think you got a long way to go. You got to know how to fill out one of those sheets first before you have an addiction.
I grabbed one of those sheets and I just looked at it and I was like, oh my God. And I took a picture of it and sent it to JT. I said, what do I do with this?
And I gotta tell you, man, all the Vegas gambling, a lot of this stuff's like pretty complicated. Like all those sporting that stuff's I can't follow it all. We got to call it. JT and ask for it. Some.
I did pretty good,
but it was
one game in each of those parlays. JT, one of them. it was my Panthers and your Chiefs both ruined them.
Yep,
isn't that amazing? How did the Chiefs lose that game? T, what's going on?
Did you talk to Mahomes? Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was sick. And I don't know.
Were you at his checkup? Did you go to the doctor with him? T,
I did. Yeah, I was really surprised that Andy didn't call me to fill in. I mean,
to fill in. Too.
Yeah.
They'll have you fill in, I'm sure, at the buffet or something. You could wear a Hawaiian shirt. I don't know where you're going to fill in as quarterback.
If Andy Reid knew how much I like buffets, I guarantee you I would be the backup on the team.
I believe it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, man. All right, roll the intro. Right. Let's go. Let's do the show. Clicked twice. Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the great American motorsport, drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. Hey Hey, gang, Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for joining us round Drag Racing's water cooler. Remember, subscribe. Take a second. Subscribe to the channel. Support those that support us. Support all the sponsors. Make sure that this whole thing, you know what? Word of mouth, I think, is like the real, that's what it seems I hear about the most at the racetrack. So tell people about the show. Join this conversation because I feel like we're doing the Lord's work here. Right, talking about drag racing. I was paying attention to some other like stick and ball sports media over the weekend and just listening to some of the commentary. And I thought to myself, we need more of this. Like, we need, I mean, this is my guys would kill me, but we need to be talking about the issues that are facing our sport and things that are happening in our sport way more. Like, we have to be we need more talking heads. We need more ongoing conversation because I do feel like this week, obviously, everybody's attention turns to SEMA and it becomes this whole thing. It's like a black hole that it's hard to escape from, get any light out. But there's so much going on in the sport of drag racing, but from event to event, so frequently the case is that it just mums the word. It gets silent. Everybody's focused on going back to business, going back to work, doing their thing. And we don't hardly get the conversation started again until the next event. And I think about it, and I'm going to quickly get this conversation started with Mike and JT, because it's like we have all this controversy over the weekend. Runs getting thrown out, DNQs, this, that, and the other. And I think about in any other sport, that would be like front page news everywhere. But I think here in drag racing, for whatever reason, a lot of that stuff gets swept under the rug and it doesn't get talked about. And we're going to fix that here today. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about all sorts of things. And we're so excited to have you here. Somehow it's already fall. It's cold. I had to wear jeans to work today, which I'm never really thrilled about. I'm kind of a shorts, flip-flops guy, if we can pull it off. You know, if it's nice, I like to do that. But anyways, it is cold. Fall is here. We're down to the last race of the NHRA season. Somehow many other championships have already been decided. But there's a whole lot of storylines. We're a couple of months away from the big one. You guys know what I'm talking about. World Series of Pro Mom. Biggest drag race in the world. Sorry. It is what it is. If your yardstick is how many cars show up, we just play the game different. I think about scale of events in terms of industry impact, buzz, energy, enthusiasm, momentum, all those things. And I think for those reasons, the World Series of Pro Mod's the biggest drag race in the world. And I cannot wait to start announcing drivers. We got some new ones that are coming into the mix. We got some fresh faces. We got some veterans and some heroes that are coming back to see what's up. Anyways, lots to cover. Real quick, I want to bring Mike JT in. What's up, guys? You doing well? We can continue our Vegas discussion here, but I'm right.
Describe doing well.
Trying to share things.
I don't know if I'm doing well.
Oh, you're trying to scare? JT, if Patrick Mahomes got thrown out of the game on Sunday, would it not, for like some sort of rule infraction, it would literally still be talked about 24 hours a day. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, it would still be being talked about today, 3 days later, you know? And I think about for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yeah. And I do wonder, like, how crazy is it what happened this past weekend? I've pored over NHRARacer.com and you're hard pressed to find that much movement as far as individual runs being thrown out at this stage in the game. Take me through that. For those that don't know, we've had a real calamity, it seems, over the course of the last several weeks. And I want to hear from you. I want to know what you guys think about this stuff, because how these things happen, I mean, to catch everyone up, a few weeks ago, several days later, Clay Milliken's completely disqualified from the NHRA national event in Dallas, right? The NHRA Fall Nationals, days, weeks removed from the event. He is disqualified, right? Go to the next race. We're in Vegas and we've got multiple cars and multiple runs get thrown out in pro stock. Bob Tasca's run gets thrown out. Jeff Deal's run gets thrown out. Matter of fact, Bob Tasca is wearing the number one qualifier hat, has already taken photos, has already spoken to the media, press release already been distributed, all these things. And then NHRA swoops in several hours after the fact, several being like three-ish hours after the fact, and shuts this deal down and says that, you know, disallows Bob Tasca's run. And I'm just curious. I want to talk about it. I mean, were you guys surprised by all this news? I mean, what do you make of this? Seems unusual. I don't recall a time in recent history, in my memory, that all of these runs, this seems weird. Is there something in the air? Is something going on? Is this a reaction to the pro race? Like, what do you think's happening? Like, Mike, I'll start with you. I mean, what do you think's going on? Do you feel it? Do you sense it?
Yeah. I mean, if you take note of the drivers that were involved in all this, there is a little bit of a pattern. And I mean, I don't want to say that it's directly related to the pro race, but we are seeing stuff that's the 6 days removed from the event for Clay Milliken. That one was to me the most odd, and that kind of started the whole deal. Then it continued in Vegas. We were just, you know, we're getting the updates. This run's disallowed. This person's disallowed. And they're not completely throwing these guys out of the event. They're just disallowing those specific runs. And I think in the end, it just ended up shuffling the qualifying order a bit in some of these. But more than anything, I think it's a bit of a PR situation, which we talk about controversy all the time. Maybe it could be spun into, you know, more news is good news, or whatever you want to say. There's no such thing as bad ink, I guess, is what you could say. But it is really weird that that they are this late in the season sort of really clamping down on some of these things, which maybe they've let slide in the past. Maybe they haven't been focusing on as much. But here we are at the end of the countdown, and we're seeing some real season altering infractions happen. I mean, and when you look at like Funny Car, for example, haven't done all the math. We were doing the math a little bit here before the show started, which math is admittedly not our forte, right? But
speak for yourself.
I think 176 points is the most you can gain in Pomona with the points and a half. And, you know, depending on, you know, how things shake out qualifying wise, we got Bob Tasca. He's sitting in second. He's 15 points back. And I wonder, you know, we haven't really played out that scenario, but how many points did he lose on that deal? And how can these like baby points that I think were altered, that could end up, Ron Capps won the championship by what, 8 points or something?
Three last year.
And so those kind of little scenarios, while it doesn't seem like it's a big deal right now, could come into play when we go into Pomona. So that's really what I'm watching more than anything.
It's kind of crazy that, I don't know, there's not a better explanation of why now, you know, like, why is this happening?
We've heard explanations, but
yeah, but I mean,
it's nothing public. And that's what I think Wes is saying. And if you go on NHRAracer.com right now, the most recent thing on there is from the 23rd or 24th of October. So there is no statement on there about these things that happened this weekend. I don't know what their turnaround time usually is on getting those things posted, but there is no official statement on that site. There was an official release. Where was it actually officially posted, Wes, that we first saw it? I know it was on Competition Plus and the other sites that you know, post this stuff immediately. But
dude, I don't know that's okay. So that's my issue. And I think that I'm just trying to wrap my head around this, because some of the things that happened this past weekend, I don't know how you can. All right, so let's start with the Bob Tasca, the third situation. I spoke to Bob about this directly, and this is my understanding of it. And obviously I was only, you know, I'm a one degree removed from it for sure, you know, but this is what I believe to be a firsthand accounting of how much sense does it make when you can bring your headers, because the for those that don't know, that's the talk. It's all about header angle, how much they're laid back, right? So if you go and have all your headers checked, right, before the race, which is what Bob Tasca told me they did, personally took the headers over, had them checked, all good, we're ready to go, send it, right? Then later, that apparently it doesn't hold throughout the course of the weekend. He goes back, has the measured post-run inspection, right? And they're like an eighth or a quarter inch, his description, from sag, not the degree to which they're laid back, but they've sagged a little bit. And I guess for me, I can't help but feel like intent, context matters in life. I had this conversation with my kids, my wife, everybody. Context matters. And I think that that's one of, you can accomplish a whole lot in life, and you can, if you recognize early on that context matters. Like, I think me growing up in sales and having to deal with the public and whatnot, you know, you had to recognize that, like, this person that just told you no, or this person that just lost their mind at you and got all mad, they might not be a bad person. The context of the situation matters. Maybe they just lost their job. Maybe they just, you know, whatever. Context matters. And for me, I'm trying to wrap my head around what context exists where it makes sense to I mean, in my opinion, publicly humiliate someone as respected and widely adored as Bob Tasca. I mean, you've basically said he's cheating. I mean, I would have a problem with that, right? You're calling into question his integrity. And I looked at NHRaRacer.com. I've searched it. I can only identify a couple of times, two actually, where Bob Tasca's ever had, I mean, if he had some sort of history of this, maybe that makes sense. But I think that you undermine, I mean, if you go do a deep dive on this and you start asking around, this is someone swoops in and reverses the decision of their staff. And like, I can't count the number of times I've had to live with whatever decision JT made, right? Sometimes they're bad, you know what I mean? And I've had to live with whatever decision Mike makes. I've got to live with whatever decision a lot.
Those are usually good ones.
Those are rock solid, typically. Not really. But do you see what I'm saying? Do you guys agree? You can't undermine your staff like that, because now you've basically shown me that it doesn't matter what any of these other guys say, right? Don't care. Their opinion doesn't matter. I'm going to come in and overrule them. And I've got an issue with that. I think that makes everybody involved look bad. It makes NHRA look bad. It makes your racers look bad. And I don't understand, I don't understand what you're trying to accomplish, right? Like everybody I talk to is like worried about car count and the fuel ranks and how can we improve this and how can we make it better? I show up at these races and I can't help but feel like, are you not seeing what we're seeing? Like, let's not piss off Bob Tasca. Let's not run this guy off. You know, let's not run these people off. They have options. They don't have to do this. Very few of the people that are in these cars, that's the thing, is I think that there's NHRA oftentimes acts as if and operates as if all these people like have to have them, right? I mean, and there are not that many sponsorship driven deals in the pits. Like if you walk around, I mean, you think the Torrances, they're spending their own money, right? By and large, a lot of these guys are spending their own money to go drag racing. There are some certainly ones that have big sponsors and whatnot. Ron Capps, Antron Brown come to mind, but a lot of this stuff's private money. So you have to be like cognizant of that, in my opinion. And you have to operate with a little bit of tact that I'm kind of shocked by. I mean, then you go to the situation with the pro stock runs being disqualified.
Yeah.
Because this was being presented to the masses as a safety violation, right? This, and I mean, this, if you dive into this very deep, you got to really, there's issues with the way the rules are written. There are, and what are we doing tech and cars for safety after the fact? Like those cars need to be teched for safety, belts, fire suits, SFI numbers, clutch can, all that act, all those, that needs to be done before the race starts. So you're telling me like after Q2, we're just discovering these things. I don't know. I really think there's some hard work that has to be done and some really tough decisions made, because I don't know, there is an air coming, and I don't want to, I'm with you, Mike. I hate to believe it's the announcement of the Pro Superstar Shootout, but I can't help but feel like there's a little bit of a witch hunt happening here, because I know even we here at Drag Illustrated, the way we get treated at drag racing or at the NHRA event, like our relationship has changed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like on the heels of this event, you know, and it's, I'm a little bit taken aback by it.
You need to be working more for a solution, you know, because it, you know, if it became a problem all of a sudden, you know, and come on. If we know anything,
here's a note for everybody involved.
Everything sags when you get all, you know, with time.
I'm getting fired up. I'm gonna sweat through my shirt. But here's the truth.
Here we go.
Right? No, but the truth is, competition happens at the bottom. At the top, we're collaborating. We're working together. And this is a message that everybody in the sport of drag racing needs to hear loud and clear. We see this all the time. Promoters stepping on each other, tracks stepping on each other. That behavior happens at the bottom. The people at the top, we're all trying to work together. We're trying to find creative solutions where everyone can win. And not everybody has to win a ton, but we just have to taste victory. We have to just have a little sliver of it. And I do think that like some open conversations, and I don't know why, communication has to happen. We have to be talking about these things. We have to fumble forward. We have to fight forward. And there's going to be disagreements. And I'm not here to say that I've got all the answers. Absolutely do not. But I do believe the answers can be found. I do believe that there are enough smart, able-bodied, sound mind people in the sport of drag racing that we can find ways to work together. And I just am a little shocked that if I had racers that had been racing with me for decades, over a decade, I just can't imagine a scenario where I'm like eagerly seeking out an opportunity to like blow up their spot, right? Or put them on blast. I just can't really wrap my head around the logic. And especially in the environment that we're in right now. And I guess I'm surprised, and I would encourage people, like, we have to be talking. Promoters need to be talking to one another. There's always going to be a sense of competition, right? I mean, that's what our sport is built on. And I do think everybody should be pressed to do better, try harder, do more, find ways to provide value. But we can do it. There's enough to go around. I mean, most of these tracks, most of these events almost have more racers than they know what to do with. I mean, there's a lot of racing happening right now. There's a lot of very successful events happening right now, but we've got to start tearing these walls down and find a way in our sport to get rid of this us versus them mentality that exists. I mean, and we have to start having these conversations, because I really do think we're reaching a point of no return where, I mean, the winds of change are blowing in the sport of drag racing. Things are happening. Things are happening differently than they've ever happened before. And I'm really proud of it. And I'm really excited about some of the things that are happening. But I got to tell you, we've got to find a way to have some open communication, find some common ground, because this whole notion that we got bikes being stolen, you know, like bikes being held hostage. We got all this stuff happening, you know, cars getting DNQ'd. I mean, how the hell? So do you think Erica Inner's been racing the same car all year, right? So that car, we just now figured out there was something wrong with this. What are we doing? Like, and it doesn't make anybody look good. It makes everybody look bad, matter of fact. And I think we're coming into an era, like into a time when these things are not going to be just accepted. And I think there's going to be fallout and blowback, and I don't think it's positive.
I'm still trying to find the actual press release. Did you get it?
No,
I don't think I got it. And I'm on the distribution list, and I'm just reading, catching up. We were out there this weekend, so I wasn't keeping up with all my emails the way I normally would. And I don't see the actual release. I don't see any statement or release on NHRA.com. The only really, and kudos to Bobby at Competition Plus and his team for reporting on this the way they did. They apparently got a release or got the information and reported on this throughout the weekend, got quotes, got all that stuff. And so that's really the only record that I see of it at this point.
That's what I said.
Is and it's not on NHRAracer.com, and I don't have it in my email. So it's, I don't know. I find that odd as well. I'm reading like a recap right now of the weekend, 10 things we learned at NHRA Las Vegas.
Real quick, if you're Bob Tasca, how do you feel the headline on racer.com is Tasca DQ'd?
Oh, they got it on Racer.
I'd be a pissed off son of a gun. I'm telling you. And I'm not saying anybody deserves special treatment necessarily, but I just think that this is something that I teach.
Do they have it on Racer for real?
It's on racer.com.
Okay.
Update, Tasca DQ'd. Koretsky, Salinas, and Height lead into Vegas NHRA finals. And it's like, and to be honest, in Funny Car, Robert Height's run of 385, blah, 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 blah. After the fourth round qualifying runs from Funny Car drivers Bob Tasca, J.R. Todd, and Jeff Deal on Saturday in Las Vegas were disqualified when their cars failed a post-run inspection.
I like this comment right here. You know, the fact that the NHRA doesn't even comment on it is pathetic for professional sport. And I've been saying this for years, you know, like, get out in front of this, you know, have a press conference, you know, tell everybody why.
At least make a statement. Someone has to say what exactly, because now the NHRA has basically, they're letting Bob Tasca and like me or Comp Plus or whoever else control the narrative. Right.
Yeah, I saw it on Woody's post, you know, like, you know, that's where I read it first time. So,
and you just got to think about this stuff. What the hell is going on? Like, we're just discovering, how can these issues be happening the second? If I'm NHRA, I'm telling my tech team, we have to have all competition, all technical, we have to have all that stuff, no loose ends headed into the countdown. Because you're starting to call into question the integrity of what's happening here. like knowing how close these championship battles are. I mean, like Ron Capps won by 3 points last year. Those are the baby points that people talk about all year long. Those little bitty points where you qualify low of the session, second lowest of the session.
They're hard to come by.
That's where hard to come by. And now you're starting like, okay, we're going to start messing with those things. And I'm not saying that this is like, well, no, I think it might be. I think it's personal. I think there's vendetta-based stuff happening here. And I think it's a bad look for everybody involved. And this is the type of stuff that historically I would not talk about. But I've had a little bit of a personal revelation. And I've just thought, we have to talk about this stuff. And if I've got to be the one that takes some bullets for it, I guess so be it. Because we have to evolve the sport. And we have to, it's time to act the part. I mean, I feel like I'm agreeing with you, JT. Like there should be big talk about this. Like you got to say your side. And there's like next to zero commentary about this from the NHRA.
You know, like the NHRA, I mean, in most sports, the NHRA would have came out with a statement, you know, maybe had a press conference, fielded some questions. You know, like say the NFL, the coaches would have been asked about it, you know, probably been fined afterwards, you know, for,
I mean, and I think about this whole Rick. And so
this Cameron,
the whole
Cameron
thing with Clay their, Milliken.
Yeah.
What the,
they're not talking about doing it. They did it. It took 74 points from him.
And I listen, unsecured ballots. Like I'm not at all trying to make light of the infraction, but that I don't understand the logic of doing it a week later. Like I honestly think that the play there is to say, hey, NHRA tech team, we fucked up. We missed one, right? Like we should have caught this in Dallas and we should have thrown them out in Dallas if this was an issue. And I think that what the way, remember this too, it's rarely the news, it's how it's delivered. Rarely is it the news, it's the delivery of said news. And I think that if you would have, like in the moment, teched Clay Milliken's Top Fuel car and said, hey man, you got unsecured ballots here, you're out. You're out for the weekend, sorry. But to do it after the fact to a brand new team owner that's having their best year ever, that's had all this success this year, why just shit on them? Like, I don't understand
work to resolve the problem, you know, and if it's not that big of a deal, if it's not giving you a competitive edge.
That's a big one. Because that car wrecks and it sends a puck of weight or whatever out into the, that's a big one. I totally understand. But what if a plane mistakes my fucking light here for a landing strip and lands on the building? What if? I don't know. What if? And I just think 6 days later, you're just such a bad look for everybody involved, man. Who benefits from that? I'm curious. And I'm telling you, when I'm hearing all this scuttlebutt about, oh, we're going to show you guys, or you're going to, an NHRA staffer told one of my guys that we're going to fail miserably, right? That's the mindset, right? So it's like, I think there's a little bit of something in the air, and I think it's super, super short-sighted. I really do. I don't, it's weird. There doesn't need to be.
What do you think? Contention. I mean, the Clay Milliken thing. What do you think? So the ballast. I'm, you know, just refreshing myself on the whole story here. Basically, they added weight to the car to keep the nose down. It that shook bitch so
gets
hard.
Down,
yeah, it right? shook so hard that it shook the ballast loose out on the track. Obviously, rule infraction against the rules. Bad deal. No one wants that happening. But they went and picked it up, and no one said anything. For 6 days, then it comes out. Now they've decided 6 days later that they're going to do this, and the NHRA was contacted by Competition Plus for statement. Instead, they got a statement from NHRA. Clay was discovered to have loose ballast in the semifinal round. Per the NHRA rulebook, discovery of loose or disguised ballast will result in disqualification from the event, regardless of whether the infraction occurs during qualifying or eliminations. Okay, so that all makes sense, but why the 6 day thing? That's what the weird part is. The weird
That's
part
what
about
I'm saying.
The
like,
pro
I'm not
stock
saying
thing
the rule
is again, like you said, something
it's the timing of it.
Yeah, you know? The timing of them all are weird. So yeah, I mean, it is the more you think about it, the weirder this whole deal is.
I don't know how else, and like I said, these are the things, but I'm also not going to operate in fear. I'm not. I mean, I'll never go again. No big deal. It's really not a big deal to me. And I think someone has to speak on behalf of the, like, there is this, I've been saying this a lot. what racers want is to feel like they're in an equally yoked relationship with promoters and track operators. And you can see it when they exist. And there's always, right, everybody bends and sometimes a guy wins a little too much, right? But like, if you look in this world, everybody just wants to feel like they're kind of on level ground, right? That they're appreciated, they're respected. And I do think that there is a, that's the issue that permeates the NHRA, is that decisions like this, the message that it sends is not to have your ballast secured. The message that it sends is not to piss these people off or not to say anything cross, because they may come blow your spot up 6 days after the fact, right? Because they're going to make it personal, right? Like, is it or isn't it? You know, I just think that this is a really, really questionable, that does nothing. It's not about, doesn't appear to be about safety. If it was about safety, you'd have caught it beforehand. You wouldn't have let it happen, right? I mean, if it was about safety, then you would have the people in place to make sure that things like this don't happen, right? I mean, am I wrong? Like, if it was about safety.
Well, in this Clay Milken situation, Clay states in this article that it came out of the car and it was brought back to us and nothing was said at that point. That would have been the thing. Like, here's your ballast, Clay. And as you know, this is going to be a disqualification. I mean, I think that would have been perfectly acceptable.
The NHRA is basically like a mob. I've said that before, but it's kind of like that. I mean, they literally kind of just make it up as they go. We're going to tax you on everything. We're going to, you know, charge you for your own merch sales. We're going to charge you to park your trailer here.
Charge you not to eat our food.
Yes. I mean, it is. It's basically like the damn mob.
No, I mean, it's literally, I just don't understand it. And it for me, I can't help but feel like, my God, we're like 70 years into this thing. And it seems like so much of it, of their success is like in spite of themselves. Because it seems like they do every turn, they're trying to make things hard. And you don't have to, I've never seen anything like it. You walk the pits of an NHRA national event, you are hard pressed to find a happy camper. You really are. I mean, you're hard pressed to find somebody thrilled. Really, I mean, it's an insane thing. But their sandbox is so significant, and they recognize how significant their sandbox is. They recognize the ticket sales. They recognize the TV program. They recognize all these things. But, and everybody, it's like, it's such a weird thing, because if you say a crossword about them, ooh, they come out of the woodwork to argue, right, or defend it. But I mean, there's some things that are wrong. And if you don't see that, you don't want to see it. You're not talking to the right people. You're in an echo chamber talking to one another about how awesome you are and how great job. You know what I mean? Like, we have to have some real conversations about this stuff and find a way to get this headed back in the right direction. From a lot of my understanding, I think COVID is probably as much to blame for this technical situation than anything, because I think the technical staff was reduced during COVID, understandably so. And I don't know that it has returned staffing wise to post COVID levels. And I think that that's something that's got to happen soon, because as a promoter myself, I know one of the most important things to racers is the integrity of the competition. I know that that's one of the first, whenever we announced that the World Series of Pro Mod was moving to Bradenton and we were doing this whole thing last year, and all this hubbub and all that, almost every one of those racers that we invited and ultimately accepted their invitation, one of the first questions they ask is like, hey man, what's tech going to be like?
Oh, they want it.
They want it.
They don't
want
to show up.
They want scrutinized.
Unless they know. Yeah.
100%. They don't care what the payout is. We could put up $500,000. But if they think that there's no teching or there's no very minimal tech, it's a problem, you know? And that's why we put such a high priority on promoting our tech department, right? Like, every time we can quote John Sears, we're quoting him, right? Every time we can shine a light on him, because I want him to be respected. I want him to be known. I want everybody on our tech team to be known. And I want it all to be above board. So I totally appreciate like the desire to maintain the integrity of the competition. But when you have these like ticky-tack infractions at weird times all together, it just sends a really, really bad message. And it sends a message across the board to everybody involved, from sponsors. Because I mean, those are the conversations I'm like, man, you know, I can't believe, you know, we got thrown out. Our run got DNQ'd. How do what happened? And then you got these team owners and drivers having to try to explain to people why these things happened. And it's just, it seems unnecessary. And I don't know that it does any good for anyone. I don't know that racing's any safer today following all these DNQs. I don't think that anything is different on Wednesday, November 1st than it was on whatever Friday, October, whatever day it was. Like, the sport's no better. Matter of fact, we've just set a bunch of shit on fire is what we've done. We've taken a whole bunch of stuff and set it on fire. And I don't understand the logic. And I don't want to like harp on this necessarily, but I feel like it needs harped on. We have to talk about it. And they have benefit, they being an HRA, they've benefited over the years from no one talking about it. Right?
Yeah.
No one's talking about it. And they've even got like most of us in the media not talking about it because everybody's afraid to have their credential revoked or not get a ticket. Well, fuck, we're already there. So I guess send it. You know what I mean? Like, because then that's kind of how I feel. Like, I guess if we're going to, you know, can't get a ticket, can't get a call, can't get a text, can't get an email back, you know, whatever. And it's really interesting. It's a weird dynamic that exists out here. And I don't know that it has to be this way. And I tell you, though, it's exciting because the pump is just being primed. Like, there is more and more energy being put into whatever's next, what's new, what's happening. Because, I don't know, man, a lot of unhappy people, and most businesses are built on the back of a pain point, right?
Wouldn't you rather be talking about the, oh man, next last race of the season, we're going into the final race of the season.
I can't believe why you do it.
Implications and all that. I mean, and everyone is talking about that on all the outlets, especially on NHRA.com. But I mean, here today, that's what we should be talking about. Season coming to a close, who's going to win championships, all that stuff. And it's got a little bit of a cloud over it.
Well, when you get everybody talking and you don't put out a statement, you're not.
I don't know who's staging lanes now. You ain't sent me an email. I ain't got an email from you. Send one.
Yeah. So it's like, though, if you don't put out a statement, you don't explain it real clear, you know, then it's like the telephone game and everybody's coming up with their own narrative, you know, as you go down through here. And then they get twisted up and tilted, you know, when the racers have a different excuse than what they think, you know, why they did it. Well, you didn't tell anybody, you know, you have to tell somebody why you're doing something. You have to be transparent to some extent. You know, or people are going to make up their own narrative on it.
Well, especially in this day and age, right? But I mean, in this day and age, you have to. That's kind of the expectation, in my opinion. Is I just think that
especially now,
there's never been this much information available to us. There's never been this many ways to spread information, and you have to recognize that and evolve and go, okay. If we're going to make these really, really, really tough technical competition-based decisions, I just think it's only fair that you then explain yourself, right? I mean, and I think that they're kind of coming at it like, I don't owe anybody an explanation. I think NHRA does owe everybody an explanation.
I watched them do it in NASCAR where they take that car that they have halfway tore down, you know, and go over and explain, you know, why the infraction was imposed. Haven't you seen that before?
Yeah.
Where they actually go over and explain this is why we did this and this is why we did that and actually show people. Because, well, it's kind of bullshit not to.
I mean, I think you have to. I mean, I think that these dude, wasn't there like a trial over Deflategate?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right? I mean, I think there was. I mean, wasn't there a judge involved? Like, you know, I'm going, that dude's okay.
Guilty.
Right? I'm just look at saying this, that like Ryan McCaddy saying that they're on the Rick Ware, on Clay's YouTube channel. I was trying to find this. I didn't see this yet. Clay responded to the whole deal on his YouTube channel. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, we will. I mean, I don't know. I feel like And here's the thing that I want to like kind of close this particular conversation with. There, people, we all have to recognize that this conversation is rooted in love. And I know it sounds a little weird, a little corny, right? But it is. It's rooted in our collective love, passion, and enthusiasm for the sport of drag racing. And we all want to see it evolving. We all want to see it trending in the right direction. And I think that that's heavy is the head that wears the crown. I mean, you can't in one breath like behave like you're the only game in town and you're the king of the sport and all this, which I think they are, right? No doubt, no argument here, but then not do all the things that kind of come with that, right? Like, I think that they want to do all the stuff that feels good, but not the stuff that's uncomfortable, right? The stuff that's not so fun that comes with being the figurehead of the sport of drag racing. And that's what we need is, I mean, I look at all the thriving sports leagues and all the thriving things, and I see a lot of really visible leadership. I hear from these people all the time, people in front of microphones on camera all the time, constantly. I mean, look at Adam Silver in the NBA. This dude is constantly in front of the camera. He's constantly commenting on things. He is constantly, I mean, think about when the kid that plays for, I'm drawing a blank on his name, the kid that plays for the Memphis Grizzlies had all the deals with Ja Morant, whom I actually was a fan of, right? Superstar athlete. The kid's got ups for days. I mean, jump over the hoop. It's insane. Incredible level of talent. He's waving a gun around on Instagram Live or whatever. Adam Silver, probably that's the last thing that he wants to talk about, right? But he's got to.
Well, Adam Silver was on, if you watch NBA opening night from Denver, the TNT crew, Shaq, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and they had Adam Silver on there. And Charles Barkley just straight asked right during the interview, hey, there's a lot of domestic violence cropping up, domestic violence charges amongst players. We can't have that. You know, what are you doing as commissioner of the NBA, and what is the NBA doing to help solve this? And I think Adam Silver was like, all right, but he did have a good response and outlined some of the stuff that they are doing. But there was like no softball.
Well, I mean, I just think about it, like literally after
huge
every
media
outlet
taking them to task.
Yeah. I mean, and after every single UFC event, almost every single, you've got Dana White standing at a podium taking questions. And I think a lot of them are like softball layup things, but like sometimes there's a controversy, sometimes they're not. And if there's a controversial decision, he's got to talk about it. If there's somebody gets robbed, if there's an early stoppage, if there's a late stoppage, I mean, there's been several issues. And I mean, when you're talking about UFC, it can't be more any plainly life and death. You know what I mean? Someone holds a choke too long and the ref doesn't stop the fight. I mean, it's a dangerous game, and I just every bit as dangerous as drag racing, and not well. It's dangerous, very dangerous. I'm just saying that the risk. What's the word? It's serious. It's a grave, dire situation, and I think if you're going to treat it like it's life and death, you better be prepared to talk about it like it's life and death. You know, and I'm just a little bit perturbed by the whole deal, and I don't understand the timing of it. I don't understand it happening this late. You know. I'm getting an email right now. Wes, your take on the NHRA tech shit is 100% correct. Thank you for being willing to shout out about it. Thanks, Joe. Here's the deal.
It'd be easier to impose these infractions and stuff too if you're paying a hell of a lot more. You know, like if this is your sandbox and you're making the rules and you got to abide by everything, if you're paying a bunch of money to these teams, but these guys all
are losing their ass, right? I mean, and that's the other thing. It's like
for them to make money, and they are the stars, and then you're imposing this stuff on them where these points are hard to get. Yeah, it's
I mean, and I think that it's like
backwards, man.
Yeah, I mean, and this is another example of like if the money was right, none of this wouldn't be talking about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it's like it's death by a thousand cuts is what it feels like to me. Is it's like, my God, man, like what are we trying to accomplish as a group? And what sucks is you've got a pit, quite clearly, you got the pits full of like willing participants, people that are willing to spend tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars doing this, pursuing this passion that we all share. And I really question any effort to snuff out that enthusiasm. And that's what I'm feeling right now is I know for a fact that there was a pro stock team owners ready to pack their shit up and leave this weekend in Vegas, right? Ready to throw in the towel and only decided not to because of how it would affect the team and all these crew guys and all these two crew chiefs and these drivers and all these people that are connected to the team. I mean, how would that make them feel, right? If they've worked all year and, I mean, they work like dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing is I don't think these decisions happen if you had any
any idea at all how hard this shit is. Like, when I see decisions like that made, I go, okay, this motherfucker has never put up an awning, has never driven all night, right, to DNQ or lose in the first round. They take for granted the effort. They take for granted how hard drag race this is. You can't live life harder than this. I mean, you really can't. I think about Mike Moorhead, top sportsman racer, goes to the final. They're changing engines in a top sportsman car, right? They're racing for $1,500, 10,000 miles from home, right? $500 a night hotel, and they got 30 of them. Here to race for $1,500, swapping out $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 engines to get ready for the next round. And it's like, that is happening at some level in every pit area at a drag race. I mean, I'm telling you, every pit area, there are battles being fought, a mad wife, missing kids spot, you know, you're missing Halloween with your kids so you can go drag racing, or you're missing this, or the business is getting behind. There's a lack of appreciation for how much goes into this stuff. And I guess I'm just to the point now where I can't be quiet about it anymore. I care about this group of people way too much to see them disrespected at this level. And it's frustrating. And I guess for me, it's exciting in a lot of ways as well, because it shows me there's so much out there for us, because this group of people, they just want to feel respected. They just want to feel appreciated. And by and large, they do not. And it's concerning. It's really concerning to me, because what sucks is drag race. This is the highest, like this is the best time ever to go drag racing. There's an incredible amount of great drag racing going on. This sport is succeeding at so many different levels and in so many different ways. But I think of the tip of the spear being NHRA pro categories, right? These are our heroes and superstars. They're the tip of the sword. We need them healthy. We need it strong. We need all those things. And then to just, I make so light of it. I'm very surprised by it.
Guys. Hey, bookend this, Kayla, we just got an update from her. Kayla actually talked to Erica Enders, Tim Fabrizi, and Ron Capps this afternoon, and is working on a story about this subject, about all these DQs for DragIllustrated.com. So looking forward to reading that and hearing a little bit more. And I think those are some different voices than I think we've seen in some of the other articles. So that,
I mean, think about this. Earlier this year, J.R. Todd
is the crew chief for John Force, by the way.
Earlier this year, J.R. Todd had a collision. John Force.
I said that. Who's Fabrizi crew chief for?
Yeah.
Force?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think currently.
Anyway.
They rotate around.
Around on Force's team. I'm trying to make sure that he's on. I think he's on Force's car right now. Anyways, my point is, how do you? Where's this at? Hold on, I'm trying to find it. Shut up, JT. What are you laughing? Are you laughing at me? No, my deal's not loading right. I don't know why, but anyways, whatever. It's all good. I do think these things have to be discussed. I think we have to have meaningful conversations about these things. And I want to know. Oh, I was talking about J.R. Todd. So earlier this year, J.R. Todd and John Force had this collision, right? And it was like a huge story. Cars torn up. J.R. Todd and team go back to the shop in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and they've got to like, they got to do all this, you know, it's a crazy thing, build a new car, get back out on the road, this whole insanity, right? Can you imagine having committed that time, kind of time and energy and resources to all this, and then like, then be DNQ'd for some ticky-tacky violation? You know what I mean? It's just, and another, I mean, Coletta Motorsports, big involvement with the Pro Superstar Shootout. Like, you have to wonder, like, what is going on, right? So anyways, I think that it's frustrating that at a time when things seem so positive, we got Tony Stewart fielding a car, we got another mixed motorsports team owner, Rick Ware, involved. We've got, you know, new cars coming out. I mean, there's a lot of things, right? I mean, there's a lot of things very positive, but it just seems like we can't get along. I mean, it just seems very odd to me. It really does. I mean, we had a situation earlier this year where a rider almost got their credential revoked for simply unintentionally talking about the Pro Superstar Shootout. Man, what are we doing? Really? I mean, this is craziness. It really is craziness. And it's a can't see the forest for the trees moment that we've got to be better than. We have to be better than. And I personally have made all the reach outs imaginable, gotten next to nowhere. And that's cool, whatever. You know, but it's like, it's just frustrating because I don't think it needs to be this way. And like I said, there's so many good things going on in the sport of drag racing, yet, you know, here we are headed into the last race of the season, and we're talking about all these silly DNQs and mixed information, no clarity on what exactly happened or what exactly the problem is. It's very frustrating. It's very, very concerning, in my opinion. And I don't think it's anything you can build. I don't know what good comes from it, right? I just don't understand the what are we trying to accomplish, right? Because like it's like the UFC. I'm going back. They're trying to clean up the sport several years ago, right? So they introduced drug testing. I mean, that would, if you're going to try to make some push to like make the sport safer or tighten up, you know, hey, we're going to make all of our teams cross their T's and dot their I's. I understand it, but you got to be it's got to be transparent. It's got to be talked about. Hey, here's what we're noticing: some teams slacking off on some stuff. We're noticing some gray area that we want to eliminate, or we're recognizing. Talk about it. Like, hey, we've got an initiative headed into the end of 2023 to really tighten things up around here and make sure that we want all of our teams to know that nothing's going. That's not happening at all. No communication about it. Right. Matter of fact, decisions are being made and then being reversed. I don't know. It's very interesting to me. I mean, I don't understand it, to be honest. So anyways, who do you think's going to win the championship?
Wait, was that a softball?
That was a softball.
Of course, as soon as I was going through all these websites trying to find all this stuff, I got to get back to my standings. We got some interesting battles going on after Vegas. A Pro Stock Motorcycle, I think, is already wrapped up. I don't think that anybody can catch Gage Herrera.
Real quick, let's give this kid 181.
Yeah, he's got 181 point lead. I believe, I think 176 is the most points you could earn by our quick.
Selena will know. In the chat.
Yeah, Selena, tell us. I think he's basically got it wrapped up. If we go to Pro Stock, I think it's a three-horse race. I think Matt Harford's got an outside chance, Greg Anderson as well. But I think if Erica qualifies decent, and I think maybe wins first round, I think it's over.
Really?
But yeah, just based on my quick graphic designer math.
Well, and yeah, for me, I'm looking at.
But no, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Okay. I'm getting there. But Funny Car is I'm building up. Funny Car seems to be a four car race. You've got Hagen in the lead. Task is 15 points back. Height 17 points back. Ron Capps is 139 points back. John Force is in fifth, 242 back. He can't catch him. So you've got it coming down to those four. Then in Top Fuel, I think it's a six car, still six cars with chances or a chance to win, maybe possibly even seven, depending on how that math shakes out for how many points you can earn at this point and a half event in Pomona. But you've got Torrance leading 15 points back, Kalita, then Pruitt, Salinas, Justin Ashley, Antron Brown. Antron is 146 back. So what I'm getting at is, as we go up the line here, we've got one championship already locked up. Then we've got possibly three cars for Pro Stock. Then I think four for a Funny Car. Then you get to Top Fuel and you've got six or seven that have a chance, and which is what we've been seeing as we, you know, have talked about this for the last couple of years, that just the competition level in Top Fuel. And I think we're seeing that play out again this year with having the most cars in striking distance going into the final race of the season.
Burr, burr, burr.
Boom. Now you
can go. There we go. Well, hey, I got to tell you, I think that Pro Stock Motorcycle, I think Gage Herrera, I'm hearing all sorts of, this guy is special right now. This is an especially talented young man.
Okay. Update.
Especially update. Good.
Lena says Krawick does have an outside chance.
Oh,
if he gets all the points in Pomona.
Okay. Well, I think that like the sport of drag racing owes Gage Herrera like his flowers, like a round of applause. Like, I don't know. We've never seen a rookie have this kind of achieve this level of domination in their first year. Like, there's never been, in my opinion, a more runaway
rookie of the year. I mean, this guy, it's unbelievable. And he's done it all with like kind of this cheesy, like, you know, no big deal. Like he, I don't know that he even totally recognized, like, hey man, you came out in your first season in Pro Stock Motorcycle and just like crushed the whole deal. I mean, crushed everybody. And I don't know, man. I think NHRA Pro Stock Motorcycle, they got some figuring out to do as well, right? Because I don't know how long it stays. I mean, you can't have bikes running away with it like by that much, by a tenth. I mean, you can't do anything. You know, there's nothing you can do. It's like there's nothing that can be done. But anyways, I do think this young man is special. I mean, it's
how many,
so consistent.
How many races did he win this year?
I don't know. I think all of them.
Yeah, just all of them. Just go ahead and just round it up.
I've got a run thing here. I can pull it up. I just didn't have it in front of me. Bear with me 1 second. Statistics. Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's hard to cheer. It's hard to believe that anybody can be like as talented and as accomplished in year one as young Gage Herrera and just be so aw shucks about it. But I really love it. And I think it really endears him, I think, to the masses. It looks like to me, Gladstone, Gage Herrera.
Oh, we got an update from Auto Parts OEM Supply.
So he's 14.
For what? Yeah.
He's won 10 races this year.
10. Okay. I was like 14. Holy shit.
Dude, that's nuts, bro. He's won 10 out of 14. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
Right.
Vance and Hines has posted that Gage will win. And I think I actually read that earlier this morning. I was catching up. Let's do a show live, like when we get back from Vegas, and yeah. Gotta get my bearings first, man.
No, nah,
you'll be okay.
You'll be all right. I like doing this whole shoot from the hip thing. Watch it burn.
Yeah.
What else we got?
So yeah, that one's wrapped up. So what do you think about Pro Stock? It's Erica again at the right time, right? We were Absolutely. Talking about it earlier in the year, even mid year.
Yeah.
And I got a Wes. You were probably the first one and the most staunch supporter of the "Don't worry, Erica, it will be right there in the mix at the end of the year."
Oh, that was
movement. Mean. No, JT, you don't count.
Shit.
No, I mean it's, and I just I think we're talking about the best, one of the best to ever do it. And I don't mean to sound like because I'm a fan of all, like I
and now be the big, undisputed
big Greg Anderson fan.
Undisputed, yeah. or whatever. She broke the tie, winningest.
She broke female. The tie with Angel. She is the winningest female race car driver of all time. I think that she's
10 times at Vegas, right?
10 times. 10, in Vegas.
I know that's crazy.
That's crazy too.
Greg has won 8 at Vegas.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's so crazy. It's like,
think about that. That's 18 years worth of wins, or between two drivers. Depends on how, you know, whatever. There's two races in Vegas, so maybe it's not quite as dominant as what it seems. But between those two, it's like, fuck, you know, might as well just stay home. One of these two are going to win this damn race.
It's Erica Enders and Greg Anderson is going to go down in history as one of the great rivalries in drag racing. That's my opinion. I just really, truly believe that Erica and Greg, this is something that we're going to miss when it's gone. And I don't think we're celebrating it enough. Like, I think a documentary is going to get, should be done about this rivalry. And I mean, there's so many levels to it. The only way it would be better is if one of them raced a Ford, you know what I mean? Like that's the only way it could be better is if it was like Mustang versus Camaro, Ford versus Chevy, but it has everything else, every single component that you could ask for: competing engine shops, competing team owners, compete male versus female driver, younger driver versus, you know, they kind of came in at different eras. Like there's so many layers to this onion and it's fantastic. I look
what
to
happens,
see
what happens when they're gone. That's what the concern is. You think about NASCAR, you think about all these sports that when they lose their stars, and those two to me are the far and away the stars of Pro Stock and have been for especially last handful of years as we've lost some of the older crew, but they're not going to be around forever. And we do have some young blood in Pro Stock and I'm not overly concerned about it, but you will miss that when it's gone, when you don't have those A+ legendary superstars that kind of carry a class or a sport or whatever. I mean, every sport's kind of gone through that.
And I don't think anybody gives them, like, I gotta say, I don't support arguing with every Tom, Dick, and Harry on the internet, but I got to give some credit to Erica. She'll lean into it. She's not afraid to say what she wants to say. She's not afraid to put herself out there, and sometimes to her detriment, right? I mean, she, and I, but I got to,
how grateful are we as a sport that we have drivers that are willing to do that? Like, we need more of it, not less. And I kind of wish people would be a little bit more like fan base wise, especially like, hey, this is exactly what we want from these people. We don't want them to be vanilla. We don't want them to toe the company line. We don't want them to say the same old worn out cliches, but the fan base has to take some responsibility for forcing them into that box, cornering them, where if they say anything other than I give all the glory to God and shout out to my guys, they get ripped to shreds for it. And I mean, I love seeing the personality come out.
It's both ways though. And you're gonna see this, you know, with any celebrity or any athlete, you've got to ignore that shit online.
You can't
engage it. You know, you don't need to be going on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and start arguing with someone in the comments. You know, act like you are who you are, that you are a celebrity. You are one of the best racers. You are one of the best racers in history, or whoever you are, you know, at that time. Just own it, but just ignore that shit, you know, because when you get this popular, you're going to have half the people that love you and half the people that hate you. You know, that's competitive sports. You know, it's you're on this team, you're on that team. You don't see Patrick Mahomes getting online and start arguing with fans, you know, or Travis Kelce, or, you know, just you pick any sport. You don't see these guys doing that, probably because they were told not to, you know, just
right.
You know,
that's it. JT's like shoots out. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the whole conversation is pretty interesting, but I do think that this Erica Enders, Greg Anderson rivalry, this is just what drag racing needs. It's such a fantastic thing to see those two cars, those two drivers, those two teams be in the thick of things headed into the final race of the year. And if we got so lucky as to have it come down to a couple of rounds or one, it's storybook. I don't think either team would change it. I mean, I know that like maybe on this, you know, it's easy to say like, I wish I was like Gage and just won 10 races and are going to run away with this.
Or it's all your teammates up there.
Right. But I do think that they love this. They love this back against the wall moment. And it's great for drag racing. And I think, you know, these are where the NHRA deserves kudos, because for all the hell they take over the NHRA countdown to the championship and the format and the resetting of the points, it really does keep things interesting until the bitter end. I mean, and I think that if it weren't for you create some high, like the NHRA deserves kudos for sticking with the playoff format, oftentimes in the face of widespread negativity about it. I mean, there's a lot of these teams that do not like it, but they stick with it. And thank God they have, because a lot of these things would have been sewn up many moons ago. These last few races on the tour would be much less significant than they are. I don't think you'd have this moment where all eyes are on Pomona. I don't think you'd have that without the countdown to the championship. So I give NHRA a lot of kudos, you know, for sticking to their guns and knowing what's best especially for the storyline, because you're going to have all these stories. You're going to have, I mean, Top Fuel and Funny Car, you could have a big surprise. Pro Stock, it's possible Matt Hartford goes into this deal and he could win a world championship. I think it would take a significant happening, I believe. But still, I mean, just having that door be open and having these stories conclude in Pomona, it's a masterful thing. And I'm actually a big fan of it. I can make an argument the other way, but I, in the media and in the content business, in the storytelling business, we need these stories to last all year and to last throughout the playoffs. And they've done a pretty fantastic job with that.
You guys were at the track this weekend. What was the talk about the full schedule for next year?
Well,
that didn't come out till last week.
Yeah, it came out, I believe.
But you were still after around the race, right? You were still around some of the teams.
Oh, absolutely. I think, to be honest, I think so. For those that don't know, over earlier this week, it was announced that the NHRA has returned Pro Stock to the full schedule. So it's been a few years ago that the NHRA reduced the Pro Stock schedule to 18 races, and it was actually met with widespread enthusiasm. There was a lot of team owners that felt this was a good move for the class to get some of the people that couldn't quite commit to a full tour but could commit to this. It was very well received. And it's interesting because it basically brought some life back to the class. It got some renewed enthusiasm, got some new participation, and now we're going back to where we were. I think it's a good thing My opinion is that it's a good thing for pro stock in that it brings them back up to a level playing field. I think there was this second class citizen thing that kind of started to happen when Top Fuel and Funny Car are the only classes that are contested at every event. I think it made the pro stock teams and the drivers in some regards, not all, kind of feel like they were a tier below. Like, we're not full time, right? Top Fuel and Funny Car are the only full time professional categories. So I think that this is a fairly necessary, especially when you consider that pro stock's your healthiest category. Without question, it's your healthiest cat. Now, it can be argued that there's some, with that health comes some concerns because you have most of the field contested by two teams. And I think it could be argued that that's not a great situation. However, it is the reality of the situation and it's working at this point in time. So I think you kind of, it's okay. I'd rather have more cars than, you know, I'd rather have the situation we have with pro stock right now, where there's 20 some odd cars showing up at almost every race versus where it were a few years ago and a bunch more privateers. I'm not sure, but I do think that there's too many races overall. And like, this is, I've talked to a lot of track owners, a lot of teams this weekend. I do think that there is a belief system that there should be perhaps less NHRA races overall, but I would argue that NHRA pro stock needs to be contested at all of them. It needs to be treated like a full-time category. And I think you kind of opened the door to that not being the case whenever you reduce the schedule. I heard that a lot from the pro drive, like from the drivers that earn their living driving, where it's like the Greg Andersons, the Eric Enders, who's
John Forrest told us that.
Yeah, you know, they got to go to every race, got to be at every race. Don't want to be the class that's not at every race. Don't want to be the driver that's not a full-time driver. And I think that this kind of eradicates that. So that's a victory, absolutely a victory for the class. Pro stock needs to be at every race. But I think the next conversation that happens is, okay, we're down from at one point 24 races, 23, 22, 21. I think it's trending the right direction. But I think that number probably is more like 18. I don't know that I can really wrap my head around going to any market twice. And I love Vegas. I love ZMAX. I mean, these are some of my favorite facilities, favorite parts of the country. But what do you think about that though?
Because we talk about that, you know, the four wide events, then to the two wide and the apparent drop off in really fan attendance, buzz, everything when you get to that second race. What's your take on that?
I have mixed opinions about it. Like, cause I feel personally, I feel if you've got four lanes, you probably better use them. That's kind of like, I think, cause I personally think that it's like off-putting visually to have the four lanes and only use two of them. Right. Like, I think that no one dislikes four wide drag racing more than me. I despise it. I have no interest whatsoever in four wide drag racing. I cannot even wrap my head around the investment that like Bruton Smith and Speedway Motorsports have made in the sport of drag racing. It's unbelievable to me that you have people that love this sport so much and see so much promise and are so excited about it that they will invest the kind of money that comes with building the Las Vegas Motorsports Motor Speedway, the kind of money that takes to build ZMAX Dragway. I couldn't be more grateful for it, but I want to be honest and just say, four wide drag racing doesn't resonate with me. Drag racing to me is a very intimate sport. This is a duel. It is mano a mano. It is me versus you right here.
Of all that, the four wide seems to be obviously more popular with maybe the casual fan and maybe even some of your hardcores. Hardcores are really going to choose it over one over the other. But from a financial perspective, I think the four wide, when you're looking at it from the NHRA, the teams, the track perspective, from the financial perspective, maybe even TV, I don't know, that four wide wins in all those regards.
It's 2020, Derek Carmichael saying 2020 proved that multiple races at one track worked. I actually think that did not work. I mean, I get that it existed. I think that was that to me was, I mean, that was just purely a COVID deal. I don't know that multiple I disagree. I don't know that I see.
I think
that
it was because like all we had. So it's like,
yeah,
we're gonna support this and do this because there may not be another option. So maybe
right. That, I mean, and there were no fans.
It was surprising because
fans weren't allowed.
Right.
Fans weren't allowed. So I mean, it's I don't know. I don't know that. For me personally, I just don't think four wide. I don't see that much enthusiasm around it. And I also think that it's questionable to like use that as your promotional device when it's not what you normally do, right? It would be like UFC saying, hey, we're going to use this huge promotional device and we're going to put two heavyweight fighters. We're going to have this super heavyweight match once a year where some big guys, you know, 260 Cage pounders match. Fight each other, right? But Cage the rest match. Of the year, we're going to have dwarf fighting.
But I'm not asking
you know what I mean, or whatever.
Four wide versus two wide. I'm asking more like these tracks that, I mean, the two tracks we're talking about that have multiple events are ZMAX in Las Vegas.
I would only go there and run four wide.
You would only go there for four wide.
I would run there four wide.
That's what I'm saying.
I think if you have a four wide track, you use four. If you have four lanes, you use four lanes.
And who do you think is going to, who do you think if there had to be a decision made or the reason why they go there twice, who's in control of that? Is it NHRA? Is it a collaborative thing or is it Speedway Motorsports that determines we're having two events? One's going to be two wide, one's four wide or what or whatever. Like who's in the driver's seat when it comes to if there had to be more races on the chopping block and how those decisions get made?
Well, I don't know. I've got some info that I can't share.
Okay.
you know, like tell me later. Think that they're, yeah, no, I mean, there's some, I don't really know, to be completely honest. I'm sure that there's a contractual obligation. You know, speed, you can't, it's very difficult to hold that situation, like treat it the same way as everything else, because what did I say at the start of the show? Context matters, right? So Speedway Motorsports, they own the nicest facilities in drag racing, right? Sonoma,
Bristol,
ZMAX, Bristol, Vegas. I mean, these are like, so I think they've got a lot of leverage. And I venture to say, and I would probably be as guilty as anybody of, they've probably got a lot of influence. They probably say, hey, we'll build facilities like this and we'll do what we do, but we need to see you. You know, you need to darken our doorstep, you know, more than once a year. So I understand it. But at the same time, I think that this is what I'm talking about when I'm saying that we've got to have some conversations about finding ways, and it's just discussion. It's just communicating and talking about these things, because there's a lot of really able-bodied people here, man. There's a lot of smart folks in our sport, and I think that there's probably an answer. Do you guys agree though? Like it seems a little silly to like, it'd be like building a big dining room, but always making everybody eat at the bar in your kitchen or whatever. Like you've got this big ass dining room. Let's do dinner in there. You know, why make us, you know, I just think use the space if you've got it.
I tried to get you to answer there, Mike.
Yeah. Sorry. What you would just interrupt him?
I thought he asked you a question, but then.
Did I ask you a question?
Yeah.
No.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Then he answered it.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, that's why we started talking about that. Getting down to 21 races, maybe even getting down to 18 eventually. That's the answer. And then having all these classes, even Pro Stock Motorcycle, let's get them back to running a full schedule, right? Because it is kind of weird when you do these events that don't have the full range. I always talk about not the winner's circle, but the trophy celebration with the champagne or the truck ride back to the starting line. There's only two of us this week. It's kind of lonely. You know what I mean? So yeah,
I'm all for
having those four pro categories at every event.
I completely agree with that. And I think that, and I will say, we're not talking about this Mission Foods deal. From what I understand, this is
because they keep fucking DQing people.
Oh, true. Yeah.
We're trying to talk about your new series sponsor, but we keep getting preempted with DQs and drama and ballast.
I mean, I think that this is my concern, is I think that the things are good. And I do think that this Mission Foods situation is fantastic for the sport of drag racing. They are huge brand, lots of resources, direct. I mean, they have an opportunity
Here's a pathway with them. Tacos and tortillas. I mean, that's something.
No friend of mine if you don't like tacos, tortillas, and tortilla chips. We can't be friends. But I mean, I think this could be a huge deal. I mean, they have the ability to put these racers, put this brand, put NHRA in stores. This is, they've got built-in distribution network. Like they've got, this is a, could be a very powerful thing. They've got resources. They're active marketers. Like I see they're an active brand that are doing a lot of exciting things. I just hope we don't like, what's the word? I don't want us to like squander this incredible, the sport to squander this opportunity, because for the longest time, like that's what you need. You need a partner. You need the right dance partner. You need someone that will get behind you. Look at the way, you know, Red Bull, I think is a gold standard of wrapping their arms around a sport, taking ownership and truly being invested in what's going on. Not just sticking banners up, but like taking an active role in the promotion and the growth of the sport. I mean, they've invented sports. And I think that that's the kind of partner that NHRA may have in Mission. I mean, they're active at this Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge, incredibly well received, especially by the racers and the dollar. I mean, they're upping the championship fund. They're upping the purse fund. A lot of good things, you know, a lot of very good things. And I just would love to see that trend continue. But like you said, Mike, we got to spend an hour talking about who got DNQ'd and who's, you know, what personal vendetta is showing up in the competition. It's very interesting, right? So, yeah, it really is. You guys
are all right. Funny car, man. Hagen, Tasca, or Height. Caps is there too, but those three are only 50, or you got Hagen sitting at number one, Tasca 15 points behind, Height 17 points behind, then 139 all the way to Caps. So it would take a heroic effort. I really think it's down to those top three guys. And Hagen, I feel like, has been consistent all year. Tasca has had maybe the quickest car, especially as we're getting to the end of the season. But then there's Robert Height, and he wins this weekend as well.
Yep.
You know, it's
like, you know what I kind of –
and
I
actually know. Made the quickest run, a 381 with a 6, I believe, the quickest run by a funny car since 2019.
Wow.
Man,
Sunday it was so cold, weird conditions. And
I got a root for Bob Tasca
in Las Vegas. We talked about that last week too. Somewhere that they really shouldn't, but then when it gets like that, man, they're hauling ass out there.
Yeah, I think Bob Tasca. It's hard not to cheer for a guy who's. It's kind of like Doug Coletta in Top Fuel. You just want to see him get it done. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. Matt Hagen and Robert Tasca. Not to say that they don't deserve a fourth world championship, but they've won three apiece. Both in competition for their fourth. And when you've got Bob Tasca right in the mix of it, staring down the barrel of winning his first, hard for me not to kind of want to see that happen. But I think it's a toss up, really. I really do. I think that we've seen Funny Car is perhaps unlike in these class. Funny Car is a rare deal, right? It is so you can miss it by a mile. Right, it just seems like it's amongst the most volatile classes, and you could see Matt Hagen, you know, go out first. I mean, it can happen. This is one of those. I mean, how many times? I mean, Ron Capps in Dallas out first round, Matt. You know what I mean? Like these things, it can happen. The best car. There's so many good cars, but what I like about Bob Tasca's team is I like that it's kind of like some new folks. Aaron Brooks. I mean, he had kind of fallen out. Crew chief Aaron Brooks had kind of fallen out of rotation, kind of fallen out of favor. I like seeing these guys, you know, get these new opportunities and some fresh faces. So I think that's really, really exciting to see somebody new. I think Bob Tasca's got a polarizing personality as well. Like some people love the Boston thing. Some people hate the Boston thing, but I love that he's big and he's super well-spoken and he's animated and I think he's a great ambassador for the sport.
We talked about today too. Do you think that he gets a little bit more people behind him after this DQ deal, depending on where you land on that, you know, or whether it was fair or not, that
absolutely.
Hey, I mean, you want to see him go out there and win and avenge that in Pomona?
Some people don't know though.
Yeah. You know, oh yeah,
like,
that's right.
You know, like seriously, like,
and I would say a lot of people don't know.
Most people tuning in on Fox, you know, next Sunday aren't going to know about that.
Right.
If they knew about it, they don't know the whole story, you mm-hmm. know? So then they think, oh, maybe he did, you know, do something wrong.
Well, and here's right? the other thing too, that Ron Capps, He's 139 points back. He's in no way, shape, or form out of it. And, you know, this is when you start getting into that whole, like, hey, we got to go win the race, set the record. You know what I mean? Like, there's probably some conversation about that. And I don't know. I think Funny Car and Top Fuel are going to be all of this stuff. And that's, again, to bookend this whole
conversation. What about Top Fuel?
Doug Coletta. Who do you think? I just want to see Doug Coletta. I mean, I don't know. I'm a big Steve Torrence fan. Very big fan of Leah Pruitt, Mike. There's all great guys. I mean, so, but you still go back to that. Doug Coletta has been out here for longer than I've been alive, I think.
You got Torrence at the top, and you've got Antron Brown in six, but those four in between, Coletta, Pruitt, Salinas, Ashley, all kind of fit that bill as far as having won championships and could be on the cusp of one.
But I don't know that, like, Justin Ashley's what, second full season, third or whatever. He's still early in that journey. Mike Salinas, you know, he's been here for a minute, but still, like, relative. I mean, Doug Coletta has paid his dues so many times over.
Leah has to think about it, man. She's been out there longer than we probably give credit for.
Well, here, I guess maybe the takeaway from this is, I can't tell you how exciting it is that Leah Pruitt's in championship contention at all. Like, this is a fantastic thing for drag racing. And if she were to win a world, I told Leah this. I don't know that there is anything better for the sport of drag racing than when she wins. Like, you need people like her. You need them in success. You need them having success. And I think that would be a fantastic story. I can tell a story about each one of these guys. Like, if you think about, let's just start at the top. Steve Torrence, family man, single car team for the most part, self-funded, Texas boy, cancer survivor, like second generation racer, off the little bit of a hero, little villain, little can wear a black hat, right? I mean, he's got a little bit of bad guy in him if he wants to turn it on. What a story that would be, right, for him to come out. And I believe Steve Torrence is one of the best to ever do it. And this would certainly add to his legacy and the legend of Steve Torrence. And it'd be fantastic to see it happen. Doug Coletta, veteran of our sport, all these storylines, Connie Coletta, Scott Coletta, all these, the bounty hunter, Coletta heir. It's iconic. It's a part of drag racing lore, this relationship. And what an incredible story it would be to see someone who has been this close so many times before swoop in here, late stage, kind of come out of left field, get hot at the right time, goes back, wins a couple races back to back. This would just be a fantastic story. I think it would mean a lot. I mean, you look at Connie Coletta, he's getting up there in years. What a moment this would be for that team. I don't know if you had to pick a moment that is just ripe, due, needs to be plucked. That one is big. That's a big one. Leah Pruitt, like you said, Mike, great observation. She has fought this battle. And she has contended with things that I would argue no one else in that list has, to be honest. No super rich family, no one to provide, you know, right? Do you agree, Mike? I mean, yeah, worked her way up, driven cars that no one else would drive, done things. I mean, it's an incredible thing. And for her to be in championship contention is just an incredible story. Tony Stewart, you know, early team owner, this would be great. He's got two cars in championship contention. They earned their first double up at the NHRA Fall Nationals in Dallas. Now, Mike Salinas, this is a guy that, like, loves drag racing as much as anyone alive. His whole family races. They've got bikes. They got top. I mean, they got all this stuff. It's incredible. And here he is, a guy that's running a business through the week, a do-it-yourselfer, a admitted dump truck driver, you know what I'm saying, for many. Here he is competing for a world championship and a team that he owns himself, having lost his big name crew chief and Alan Johnson. When Alan Johnson went to work at Coletta's, he takes Rob Flynn, who loses his gig at Coletta Motorsports, and here they are in championship contention. Rob Flynn's one of the coolest dudes alive, nicest people alive, and it's just what a cool story that is. Justin Ashley, what a story. You know what I mean? Like, I can go on and tell you a story about each one of these people that would make it a storybook. And I think that's why, again, I get so frustrated, because God
all the pieces are there. We got so much star power. We got so many great stories, but we're not telling them enough. We're too worried. We're too busy DNQing people. We're too busy doing stupid stuff to recognize how significant this moment in time is. I mean, Top Fuel is without a question it is the king of our sport. Top Fuel, if you ask anybody like about a drag car, they're going to tell you about, oh, the long skinny ones, the big tires and the wings that shoot fire out of them. I mean, they are the highest level of our sport, and it has never been more competitive than it is right now. You know, what a victory for the sport of drag racing. But I wonder who gets DNQ'd in Vegas or in Pomona.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You know, and I just want to see these guys. What I want to see is the mood change, and that I want to see the vibe change. I think that I don't think anybody out here is a bad guy. You know what I mean? For the most part, there's some great, this is an incredible community to be a part of. And I guess I just want to see spirits up, spirits improve. You know what I mean? I just like to see there be a sense of what's happening out here. Because there's just a lot of great things happening, but we see,
you want to see them taken care of. That's what you want to see, because mm-hmm. you like them. You know, I mean, that's period. That's all it is. You know, you want to see these guys getting taken care of.
And I guess I have to recognize that. And this is the other thing. I'm not like really talking about this from like a journalistic perspective. I've never said that I was a journalist, right? And it wasn't. I mean, I barely made it through high school. So like, you know, it's. But I care about this stuff more, so much that it causes problems in my life. Like, I care about drag racing to a point that's problematic. And I care about this group of people to a point that is problematic for me. And to be honest, like this conversation that I've had with you guys today is going to be problematic for me. But I'm not going to be bashful about it, because I love the sport of drag racing and I love the people that do it. I love the people more than I do the sport. Like I love this community of people, and I want to see them happy. I want to see them content. I want to see them excited. And I don't want to see this us versus them. I don't want to see this negativity. I don't want to see this like dark cloud. You know what I mean? I really want to see, there's no reason we're not curing cancer out here, guys. We're drag racing, right? Let's enjoy this moment. Drag racing is something we get to do. We are all blessed. And I get that it's all relative and everybody's got different struggles and blah, 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 all these things. We're all fighting battles. But the fact that we get to go drag racing, that we get to do this, is such a blessing. And I guess it just bums me out to ever leave a drag race or go to one of these events and see people sad, right? Because what a blessing it is to get to do this. What a blessing it is to get to be a part of the sport of drag racing and this community of people going fast, doing burnouts, all these, it's incredible, right? It really is. And these are the greatest people. I mean, real quick, there was a life saved at the racetrack this weekend in Las Vegas. The NHRA Safety Safari and all these different various people, they're saving folks, right? They're saving lives, right? That type of thing is happening. Angie Smith gets her feet hurt. Fernando Quadra makes boots, right? He swoops in, he's going to help. Like, that's the type of people, you know. Mike Moorhead's got a wedding going on Monday night, but he's got 75 people in his pits helping him swap engines before the final of Top Sportsman. I mean, the amount of generosity and care for one another that exists in the sport of drag racing is, I truly believe it doesn't exist anywhere else. I truly believe it. And I know, like, when I talk to people like JT that are relative newcomers to this sport, it's so funny. Every time he talks to somebody, the situation is the same. Hey, dude, do you know Buddy Hull? That dude is so cool. What a great guy. Hey man, do you know Tommy Cunningham, that guy from Strat? What a cool dude. What a great guy. Great family. Hey, man, do you know this guy? Everybody's a great guy. I mean, it's like everybody you meet. It's incredible, the community that exists here. And I just know what we're capable of as a group. But we're so caught up and mired in this bullshit, and it's a scarcity mindset many times that permeates the sport of drag racing. Everybody's worried about who's stealing whose sponsor. Listen, the guy that's stealing sponsors ain't going to last here long anyways. Don't worry about it, right? And if you had a good sponsor, they'd call and tell you that Joe whatever is trying to poach the deal. It happens all the time, right? So like, if you've got a sponsor that gets poached, he probably wasn't a good sponsor to begin with, right? We got to quit worrying about these silly things. We got to quit worrying about, it's like I said, it's a scarcity mindset. There is enough to go around. Dude, they have completely ripped Las Vegas to shreds in the name of a motorsports event. Like, they've torn this city into pieces to put on an F1 race. Like, that shows you the needle mover, the driving force that motorsports can be. But we got to quit operating like a little niche and fighting amongst one another. And we have to see a bigger picture. I don't know that I say this every week, and I mean it. Drag racing is the great American motorsport. The best thing that could happen at a Formula One race is a drag race breakout. The best thing that could happen at a NASCAR race is a drag race breakout. The best thing that can happen at an IndyCar race is a drag race breaks out. The best thing that can happen at Monster Jam is a drag race breaks out. That's what we're all here to see. It's a drag race. Everybody talks about how the society's ever shortening attention span. Well, guess what? Our sport speaks to a short attention span. Our sport has built-in breaks, right? Like, hey, we're going to create a bunch of noise and have a bunch of action. Then we got a little bit of downtime where we can eat and drink and be merry. And then we're going to do it again. I mean, this sport, we spend so much time laboring over what's wrong that we're not giving credence to what's right. I went to less drag races in 2023 than ever in my life, because I chose to go to other motorsports events and other events. And I tried because I wanted to get my eyes on, like, what are we missing? What are we doing wrong, right? I'm here to tell you, I've been to a gazillion different events this year, and I've done this fairly quietly. I haven't made a big to-do about it, a little bit, but I've went and I've kind of sampled, and I've been paying attention and taking notes and watching. I'm here to tell you, drag racing has the best on-track product in all of motorsports. NASCAR, IndyCar, none of this shit can hold a candle to the sport of drag racing. It's everything. It smells. It's loud. It burns your eyes. It's overwhelming. It's an incredible, incredible thing. Our on-track product, second to none. But it's everything else that we've got to evolve. We've got to find ways to improve. We've got to bring the event. We've got to bring the enthusiasm. And that's going to start like with all of us being excited about this stuff. And if most of our biggest name competitors and the most vocal ambassadors and the people that have the biggest audiences steady stay pissed off, steady stay uninvested, steady stay disappointed or frustrated or disgruntled, I mean, we need to get the mood up, right? Company culture is a thing. One of the things that I'm most proud of here at Drag Illustrated is, in almost 20 years, I've never had anybody quit. Never. Never. I mean, I think I've had to fire like one person in 20 years, right? I mean, like, it's incredible. Two. Okay, three. That one didn't work as well as the others. But three in 20 years ain't bad. Like, I think that's pretty good, but it speaks to company culture, right? I mean, you attract people in your lives. You attract people. And you've got to be like a high energy person. You have to put that out. You get back what you give. And I think that the sport of drag racing, there's a lot more for us out there. There really is. This sport, and this isn't me being disappointed with where we're at. It's just saying there's more. I don't want people struggling. We have to find a way, especially at the highest level of our sport, to make it such that there's a pathway to victory. I don't think any of these people need to win a gazillion dollars. I don't think that they need to win one race and be set up for life. But I do think there needs to be a pathway to victory, or a pathway to breaking even, which really doesn't exist right now. I mean, you can run every race and win all of them and more than likely still be upside down. That is a wrong that we have to right. And here's the good news, friends. There's an answer. There is enough money in our sport and around our sport. There is no way in the world, in my mind, that can't be achieved. I truly believe we can create an environment where you can make money drag racing. And I know that everybody is really up in arms about making money, right? Because that is you start making money, you got a whole different problem, right? Because then people get jealous and there's pocket watchers out there and all this thing. Everybody's counting doing calculations in their head and doing math on their phone. I get it. But we have to create a pathway to victory for our teams. Like, none of this works without racers, right? Like, you have to have fans, but you can't get fans without racers. Got it. We have to find a way. And again, I know this today has been a little bit of explosive day, right? I want to acknowledge the fact that all of this is coming from the best possible place. It's a group of people that want to see our sport grow and evolve and this tradition live on for years and years and years. And And I mean, in fairness, there have been many forces come along over the years to derail this, and it hasn't worked. But I don't know that it's, I go back to racers. I think God bless NHRA and all these different sanctions and series and whatever. But I hate to tell you, none of it matters without these racers. These racers, you, all of you, you, this sport exists solely because of you. I'm not saying there haven't been people spark things. There haven't been people come along and serve as a catalyst. But it's the racing community that's so special. It's the uniquely passionate people that choose to do this, right? That have the opportunity to do this and spend their hard-earned money and their time and their weekends and make sacrifices to do this. I mean, you guys deserve the spoils. And I guess what I want to see is you get them. It's time. We have fumbled around for long enough. It is time to create an environment where racers are at least on a level playing field. You know, everybody's, it can't just be the sanction wins. It can't just be the track wins. It can't just be the promoter wins. Everybody's got to win. Everybody's got to get a little taste of it. And if it's the last thing I do, we'll get there. And if we've got to take some heat for it, if we've got to stir some shit up for it, so be it. Because I'm tired of talking about it, to be honest. I feel like for 20 years, drag illustration, almost 20 years, this month was 18 years, so I'll quit rounding up. 18 years we've been doing this. Real proud of where we've come. But I'm tired of the same old story, right? I'm tired of the same old, it doesn't have to be this way. It really doesn't. But someone's got to break the cycle, right? We have to start talking about these things and airing out these things and finding ways to move this sport forward. And again, not here to say that I got all the answers. Don't, but I'm certainly willing to try, certainly willing to fail, certainly willing to take a chance. And I think that we have to try some new things. We got to look at things a different way. We got to have some conversations, and we got to find a way to create a win-win situation. And I think there's probably like four maybe parties that really matter here. And first and foremost, it's you. It's racers. Racers, we have to improve this situation for racers. We have to create some upside for racers. We have to create that upside. We have to create some upside for our track operators. What's the biggest issue in our industry today? What's most people concerned about in the sport of direct tracks closing? But who's doing anything to help them, right? Who is? I mean, we have to quit talking about it. We have to quit sharing posts on Facebook when a track closes and go like, and it's not just showing up. It's like providing these tracks resources, working together. Like, there's a lot of track owners that I talk to that like have no like rubric to operate with. No one told them how to do anything. They inherited the place from their dad or whatever, and they just do things the way he did it. Like, we have to help them. We have to provide them the resources, right? Nextly, our sanctions and series and promoters, like, these people have to be successful. You're going to run out of people that are willing to just throw themselves to the wolves with no upside, right? That's why you see promoters go away. That's why you see these things go away, because people identify relatively, there's no upside. There's nothing I can do here. It's never going to work. We got to fix that. And we've got to improve the experience for our fans. I mean, I think there was a time when every ticket's a pit pass was all it took, but that time has passed. I mean, we need beer gardens and food trucks and all the silly shit that we don't want to do, but you have to do in 2023. I mean, these events have to evolve. And again, you got to try some things. You got to fail. You got to make contact every once in a while. I mean, you're going to swing and miss huge, right? I mean, I think we kind of swung and missed huge we've done it. We've screwed up. Everybody has, you know, but we can't be afraid to keep trying new things to get this sport to that proverbial next level. Cause I'm tired of like wishing for it. Because I see it. I see it right there. When I go to drag racing events, when I look around at the sport, I see fertile soil. Right? I mean, it's an incredible, there's no end to what this group of people can do together. We got to start working together and finding a way to make sure that everybody can taste some level of success. So guys, I wanted to tell you that it's such an honor and a privilege to get to see you and chat with you every week and see your comments. And thank you for being a part of this, because I really do believe that this is the different thing that's happening, is conversation about these things in a public space, open air, people talking about the sport of drag racing and analyzing these things and just riffing on it a little bit. Like, let's talk shop. Let's find a way. Let's move this thing forward. And I thank you all for being a part of it. Whether you subscribe to the magazine, subscribe to the YouTube channel, however you support the cause, support the sport of drag racing, we surely appreciate it. We didn't get through
really any script reads today. So I want to give a huge shout out Stroud Safety, Redline Synthetic Oils, Aeromotive Fuel Systems. They're all out there in Las Vegas participating in the SEMA show this year. Best of luck to all of you. Racers Club, log on to racers.club, pick yourself up some exclusive gear. And again, thank you guys for being a part of this conversation. It's a privilege for me and an honor to get to talk about drag racing every week. So thanks a bunch, and we'll see you next Wednesday right here on the Drag Illustrated YouTube channel. Remember to click subscribe, tell a friend. And the one dude that said I never emailed him back, hit me again. I don't see it. I've been checking my email this whole time. Haven't seen it. So anyways, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, guys.